T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer.
Hey.
He waved.
Yeah, he waved. He waved. And that voice you heard there was Will Hottie Patati Schmidt. How you doing today, Will?
Good. I'm sitting closer to the mic today because I'm soft-spoken.
Very soft-spoken. Will has scratches on his body that he can't tell us where they came from. Well, he wants to tell us it's from laundry, but
laundry.
I don't believe it.
Laundry is dangerous.
Yeah, laundry has long nails.
I have
nails,
this Wicca basket and high libido, so I don't know.
Yeah. And when laundry's dirty, you got to get it clean.
You definitely got to get it clean. Our featured audiobook today is Keto Clarity by Jimmy Moore. Audible is our show sponsor, our listeners can get a free 30-day trial and download this audiobook for free.
Yeah, so Jimmy Moore, we're talking a lot today about ketogenic diets and therapeutic uses of them. And his book, Keto Clarity, is probably the easiest to understand, don't you think?
Yeah.
It breaks it down pretty well.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good, clear explanation of how to do it. And I liked it so much, I made a blog post summary of the findings on it that people can check out.
Yeah, we're going to send people there for this show. But so if you like this topic and you want to learn more about it, his book is pretty good. How do they get that?
To get this audiobook for free, just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook, register for your free 30-day trial, and you'll see one free credit. Just search for Keto Clarity, and that can be your one free audiobook.
All right. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, ketosis and ketogenic diets. That's what we're talking about today, huh?
Yeah, and so we got a bunch of questions on Facebook. And if you're a new listener, how do people ask us questions?
Well, if you haven't...
They could call in.
If we had a phone.
But we don't have a phone.
Operators are not listening.
Yeah. But if you haven't liked us on Facebook yet, then I don't know what the hang-up is or the hold-up.
It's confusing to us.
Yeah. You got to go to Kick It in the Nuts and be part of the three other listeners that listen to our show.
Right.
Because
I think
Sunday.
One of them is going to go on vacation.
Oh, so we'll need another one.
We'll need someone to replace that.
Yeah, our listenership is growing daily. but if you go ahead and like us there, then every single Sunday we'll post questions about the topic we're doing for the week, and you guys can post your questions about it, and then we'll read it.
Yeah, so this is probably going to be a two-part show, and we have a bunch of questions, and we'll probably get into them either later in this show or at the beginning of next week when we do the part two of this, because we have a lot to kind of cover, and we kind of want to break down the basics so that people can understand who is this move right for, and when do you not want to do this, and therapeutic uses that it can be beneficial for, and stuff like that. So let's kind of get into a breakdown. And this is really going to focus on using a ketogenic diet for therapeutic effects. It ends up that this was used way back in the early 1900s for seizures. And it was really the only treatment that they had for seizures until they came out with seizure drugs in the 1930s. And when I heard this, it kind of caught my attention that, oh, people were using this for seizures. And we talked about seizures a lot on the shows before. So do you want to explain a little bit about how a lot of people might suffer from seizures and what's going on in a lot of the cases?
Yeah. So in that past episode, I believe we talked about one of the primary body chemistry imbalances that can contribute to seizures is an electrolyte deficiency, when your blood pressure runs too low and your body just can't function once your electrolytes go below a certain range. Just like the heart's going to explode if it goes too high, like an electrolyte excess, you're more prone towards seizures when your blood pressure is really low, or you fall into this imbalance that we typically call electrolyte deficient.
Right. And we've talked a lot before about how when minerals go real low and blood pressure goes real low, that a lot of things can go wrong, and depression and dizziness and all emotional issues, bipolar. You know, we have a lot of episodes that cover minerals going low. But when sugars are high, they can buffer those low minerals and the person can still function correctly. And if sugars are real low and minerals are high, they can buffer the low sugars and they can function. So if either of those are okay, the person can function a little bit. But when both of them go low, that's when seizure people often exacerbate those seizure issues, mm-hmm. when both minerals and sugars are going low at the same time. So it really interested me that they were using a ketogenic diet to help seizure patients when I heard this, because we're going to get into what I didn't know about ketogenic diets when I wrote Kick Your Fat in the Nuts, and explain some of the benefits that will go with that. But even today, this is still being used to treat seizures, but it's also being used for a lot of other issues like Alzheimer's, PCOS, hypoglycemia, type 2 diabetes. And we're going to talk a little bit about why this can be beneficial for those issues. But let's just say that the therapeutic effect that you need is that you have crazy cravings and you go insane when you stop having sugar or carbs and all that kind of stuff. So if that's your therapeutic need, then this can help you out, and we're going to explain kind of how that works. But another thing that you can look at is if you have a lot of weight to lose, this is absolutely the fastest way to do that.
Bar none.
Yeah, bar none. And there are some restrictions that you would need to make sure are functioning correctly on your body before you're able to do this. But when I've had clients lose monster weight in a relatively quick period of time, and it's very easy for them to do that, they're at least doing some form of ketogenic activity in the way that they're eating. So if you've read Kick Your Fat in the Nuts and you're doing that process, you're likely experiencing some form of that, because we talk about reducing carbs and we talk about increasing fats, like if you're eating the coconut yummies, you know, with each meal type of thing. If you're doing that, you're likely experiencing some type of ketosis. It may not be the severe nutritional ketosis like we're going to talk about, but you're likely getting some benefits from not only burning the fat that you're consuming, but burning some body fat, and that's why you're losing weight. But we're going to take this to the next level, and we didn't really teach this in the book. We talked about it a little bit in the appendix, but we want to give everybody this advanced thing because we've kind of learned some new things that help everybody do it. But first, let's look at some of the misconceptions about ketosis. And we're also going to talk about the difference between like the Atkins diet and doing a true ketogenic diet. But why don't we start with ketoacidosis? Do you want to explain that, Will?
Sure.
We'll all listen.
Yeah, that's cool. And you can help flesh out the details that I don't know about it. But ketoacidosis, which Jimmy Moore does a good job distinguishing between that and nutritional ketosis, which is kind of a newer term. But ketoacidosis is actually a very dangerous state that type 2 diabetics... I'm sorry.
Type 1.
Type 1.
Yeah.
Really? Can type 2 get into it also?
A type 2 can get it if they're like an insulin dependent type 2. Because nowadays... you know, normally they would just give actual insulin to type 1 diabetics since their body wasn't making it. But now, after a type 2 diabetic has been on the meds for so long and the meds stop working and they become so insulin resistant, they say, well, why don't we just cram some more insulin in there?
Gotcha.
And for some of those, they can experience ketoacidosis too.
So I guess a clear term would be for people that are totally insulin resistant
or not. Insulin dependent.
Insulin dependent. They can incur like very life-threatening problems if they all of a sudden have concurrent, meaning simultaneously occurring, high ketone blood levels and high glucose levels.
Right.
It's not dangerous, though, if your glucose levels are not also high. And that's the case in nutritional ketosis, where you're eating almost no glucose-generating foods, which include proteins, mm-hmm. And your body just has high ketones, mm-hmm. those ketones, we haven't really said what that is. Ketone is the energy substrate that your body makes out of fat, whether it's...
When you're burning fat.
Yeah, when you're burning fat, whether it's your own body fat or fat that you ate. So ketones is like this really awesome alternative fuel source to glucose. And your body will tend to use glucose preferentially when it's present. Like if you just ate a banana and some MCT oil, your body's going to go for the banana because the sugars are quicker to use.
Because it was more delicious?
Yeah, it's tastier. Everybody likes banana. MCT oil doesn't even taste like anything.
Yeah.
So it's going to use the glucose if it's available. And if you're trying to achieve this nutritional ketosis, you would cut those foods out that give your body glucose so that it will become reliant on ketones for energy.
Right, and here's where the major confusion is, because if you look at a lot of the huge, you know, mainstream big authorities of health and the AMA and all these people, they'll tell you that putting your body into ketosis is deadly and you're going to die and you're going to go into a coma, and it's just fiction, because you can't have high ketones and high blood sugar at the same time. As soon as you raise blood sugar levels, your body stops making ketones.
If your insulin's working right.
Yeah, unless you're a type 1 diabetic or a few of the type 2 insulin-dependent diabetics. So there really is no danger in this. It's just like it's impossible to do. And just because ketoacidosis, which is not ketosis, it's a totally different thing. It's a harmful situation when both things are high. Just because it has it in the name, people get confused and they say, oh yeah, that's going to kill you. So it's kind of like saying green beans will cause you to have gangrene. Because they both have green in the name.
They should really change the name.
Right.
Yeah, they should. It's confusing. They should get a better name. But a lot of if your doctor sees you in ketosis, sometimes they'll yell at you because they're afraid you're going to have ketoacidosis. And they just don't understand that the two things are not possible if you're not a type 1 diabetic.
Yeah, and ketosis is a naturally occurring metabolic choice that your body will make when you fast or
for sure. It's really brilliant of the body.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking awesome. Like in times when maybe some people today who don't have food, or prehistoric times when people were foraging and they didn't get lucky on the hunt, they might have to go for days or even like a week without actual meals. And then your body's got to run on something, so it would turn to fat, the storage energy savings account, and start to make ketones out of it so you could keep functioning. So it's not a weird thing you're tricking your body into. It's a designed metabolic pathway that our bodies have evolved to use ever since we've been humans.
Right, and it's understood that babies even do that when they're born. If they're only consuming breast milk, that they're going to be in a more ketogenic type state because of all the MCT type medium chain triglyceride fats that are in breast milk. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest misconception, that showing any form of ketosis is bad because you're going to go into ketoacidosis and have a coma. Just know that it's not possible. Another big misconception is that if you're doing a ketogenic diet, which is basically a very low carb, very high fat diet and moderate protein levels. And the misconception is that if you eat a diet like that, you're going to have horrible breath. And there is an issue where initially when you start moving over to a ketogenic operation of your body, that you're expelling a lot of ketones through your breath, and that can have an odor, but it's a temporary situation. Once your body adjusts the type of ketones it's making, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but once it does that, then that situation goes away.
As you're talking, think of the other thing that people usually first like sparked a question when I start talking about the structure of the diet is people get really concerned about cholesterol levels. And I know you've written, was it a video or a blog post you wrote about the truth about cholesterol?
We did a podcast.
We did a whole episode.
I think I have a video, which I can't remember.
And Jimmy Moore also has a book called Cholesterol Clarity. Yeah, same. I haven't listened to that, but I'm familiar and aware of like the whole principle of it, that this diet will not mess up your cholesterol levels. It actually improved them greatly. In our podcast, we talked about how the primary culprit or cause of elevated low-density lipids and triglycerides is carbohydrates and fatty acids that have been rancid.
Right. So listen to that episode if you do have cholesterol concerns. But the quick rundown is that high cholesterol comes from high insulin levels. And those insulin levels are usually high because an individual is not that they're eating carbs, but they're eating more carbs than their body has the ability to process. Once we store a specific amount of carbs and as glycogen in our tissues and liver, we don't have another storage place for that. So if we consume more than we can store, the body has to turn that into fats, palmitic acid, which is a type of saturated fat, and then also into triglycerides. So don't be concerned about cholesterol by consuming a lot of fats. And that's the next big concern is that people have is that saturated fats are going to clog my arteries and I'm going to die.
Right. When they've actually done some really cool studies where they compared consumption of ghee, which is clarified butter, along with, I think, coconut oil and then I think something like margarine. And they saw that low-density lipids actually went down on a heavy ghee consumption. So like when you're eating a lot of butter, it corrected cholesterol, which is right. Totally backwards. And I know if this is the first time you're hearing it, you're gonna be like, these guys are whack, they don't know, because it's so opposite of what we've been taught for decades. But right. It's just plain science now.
Yeah, and anyone in the nutritional industry, they all know this now. Everybody agrees on this. It's scientific fact that has absolutely been proven. You know, we've talked about before, 20 years ago when Time magazine put out that magazine cover with the sad smiley face of bacon and eggs and told us all that saturated fat is killing us. It was just a couple months ago that they put out another cover with butter on the front saying, look, we're sorry, we were totally wrong. Saturated fat is not the problem. So it's everybody knows the problem with this type of information is that it takes 10 to 20 years to get to the masses. So if you haven't heard this, and this is the first time you're hearing it, you can listen to our other episodes on those topics and understand that saturated fat is very beneficial and very healthy. Another misconception is that people say if you eat too low carb and you go into ketosis that you're going to get kidney stones. And what happens is, we do have a whole episode on kidney stones if you need to understand this better, but when you first start making ketones, your body will pee a lot of that out because it has not adjusted to using that as a fuel source. If your kidneys are already experiencing a burden because of issues that you already are dealing with, then it can increase that burden and you may have a kidney stone issue. But we teach about, in our kidney stone episode, that most of those issues are usually from consuming too many carbohydrates, which causes calcium to float around in the bloodstream too much, or bile not flowing correctly, so filth can't be removed from the body, and the kidneys have to handle all that load. So we're going to talk a little bit about fixing digestion before you attempt any type of diet like this. And if you do that, then the kidneys won't be experiencing that burden, and peeing out a few extra ketones is not going to be any kind of a problem.
So sugar is just the culprit of the world.
Everything
that goes wrong, it's because of sugar.
And Ken always gets upset when we say this, but if you think about everything that has ever gone wrong in Kenna's life,
it's been because of sugar.
Seriously is because of
alcohol, sugar.
Yeah.
Food,
right.
Sugar.
Right. Yeah. So it really can. And that doesn't mean that it causes that problem for everybody, but it's a really big deal. And we're going to talk about some of these issues that people are using this diet for as a therapeutic effect to fix these diseases that they don't have other answers for.
Yeah.
And the reason that they work for a lot of them is because a lot of those issues are caused by excessive carbohydrates and excessive sugar.
And just to be clear, we're not saying that the ketogenic diet is the best thing. We're trying to, the title of this episode is like, like when is the ketogenic diet right? So there's times when it's totally the best thing you could ever think of, and then for other people with other goals and other chemistries, there's different approaches, and sometimes even sugars and carbs can play a really useful role for certain people at certain times.
So, and we'll get into that in 1 second. Let's first cover the last major misconception, is that consuming a high-fat diet, since saturated fats are going to kill you, will make you nauseous and even vomit. Mm. And there's even reports of major medical people telling you that too much ketones in the blood will make you nauseous. Mm. And what's really going on, and we talk about this in detail in our nausea episode, but maybe Will can explain to us why someone experiences nausea most commonly.
Yeah, well, when you don't have enough bile flowing effectively to break down the fat that you eat, those fats that are either totally undigested or just partially undigested will be processed through your digestive system incompletely and create intense nausea. So it's not at all the ketones that are creating the nausea. It's the poorly or undigested fats in the system that are creating that.
So you have to be able to digest fats before you could do this diet.
Right. And that's why a lot of people that maybe have tried something like, not that this is the Atkins diet, but something like an Atkins mm-hmm. diet in the past, gained weight or felt awful. It's because they couldn't digest fat. So anything that you can't digest, if you try eating it, it's not going to go so well.
Right. And a lot of people that experience nausea, even in life, the poor bile flow not only restricts the ability to digest those fats, but it restricts your body's ability to remove toxins. And as the body becomes more toxic, and then undigested fats come in and those turn into toxins, now the person's real toxic and they're going to feel nauseous.
Mm. So the biggest difference between like an Atkins and a ketogenic diet is it just like Atkins will let you sit there and eat 12 pounds of bacon, and they do a lot of high protein, as opposed to this is more fat with a little,
you know, it's not really fair, and that is how people interpret the Atkins diet, but that's not what actually Dr. Atkins would do. Like, he would actually, if you were at his clinic, he would actually carefully monitor you and make sure that you personally were getting into ketosis, and he was well aware of the role that protein plays in potentially getting in the way of that, but that's not what people think. They just think, oh, I can just eat as much protein and fat as I want, and that's the Atkins diet. I just can't have a bun with my burger.
Right, and I can also... In the Atkins diet, I can also have Splenda and all these other toxic artificial sweeteners.
Diet Cokes, junk like
right,
that.
Right, right. Mm. And another big thing that mistakes that people make is they'll go on the Atkins diet without reading the book at all. And so they'll just say, oh, I got to eat fat and I got to pee on this stick. And we're going to get into the testing that takes place and errors that people make by only using urine test strips and stuff like that. So let's talk a little bit about, how to understand when you may need to fix bile issues or digestive issues before you could do a diet that includes a lot of fat.
Sure. So, we talk about this at length. If you don't want to just go off of this audio clip, you can go to our free course on correcting digestive issues at kickinthenuts.com, and we walk you through all the aspects of digestion, including like stomach acid and looking at your pHs, as well as checking out your bile flow. But to answer the question that Tony just posed, some of the signs and symptoms that your bile flow is not working well is if your saliva pH is low, like if it's under like 6.5 or even under 6.6 or so. If you have diarrhea, loose stools, gas, bloating in your mid or lower abdomen, nausea, acne, light-colored stool, like it should be like the color of the forest floor, but for some people, if their bile isn't flowing well, then their stool is lighter, like the color of cardboard. So all those things can... There's also a test you can do directly, this online test that... they seem presently pretty expensive. We're looking for a way to get it to people easier, but there's a sulfated bile acid test you can check to see if your bile is refluxing back into your blood, and it's a urinary test. So there's a link actually to that on the blog post that I created about this whole thing at mybodyofknowledge.net. Just type in ketogenic and you'll find that post. So those are different ways you can see, is my bile working well or not? And if it is working well, you'll have a saliva pH up around 6.8. You won't really tend to be gassy or bloated or have diarrhea or loose stools, and your stool will be dark in color, and you'll eliminate some of the most common causes of nausea and acne and itchy skin.
Right, so that's really important to fix that before you try this, and that's another possible cause of poor bile flow, is that so many people have been eating low fat for decades because we were scared into that. And if you're not consuming a lot of fat, your gallbladder doesn't get called into action very often. And so all that bile can start to thicken up. And there's other issues with the processed foods that we eat that also contribute to bile thickening. But there's a lot of reasons, and it's very common for someone's bile not to be flowing. And if they switch over to a high-fat diet, they're going to be miserable.
Not only are they like not getting the energy source that their body's used to from carbohydrates, right. So like that's gone, and then they're also trying to eat a fuel that they can't process, so that's actually adding to like toxicity and nausea on top of the energy deprivation.
Right, and if you can't process those fats, your brain was relying on glucose before so that it can function and that you remember your name, mm-hmm. and a lot of people they're just out of it.
Yeah, so you really got to make sure you take steps to fix your bile flow before you try this, or to make sure, just check and make sure that your bile is working well. And for most of the people that might be really interested in this, their bile probably isn't working well. Like if you're leaning diabetic and you have high cholesterol and all these factors that make your bile sticky and not work well, you need to work on that before you try to switch over to this diet.
And to get your bile working well, supplements, what do you suggest for... to get your bile.
Yeah, well, in Tony's books, he mentions a product called BeetFlow, which is mm-hmm. really great, really effective, and it works directly on the bile by helping it be less sludgy. And then
it's because of the beet greens in it that does it.
Yeah,
beetroot won't do it alone, but beet greens seem to do that.
Which are also great to eat. You can saute them. They're mm-hmm. kind of bitter on their own, but if you cook them a little bit, they're great. Or blend them into a shake. And then... there's also this other aspect, literally from the other end, of coffee enemas and coffee suppositories that can help dilate the pathway that the bile is supposed to flow through. So beet flow works directly on the bile and its fluidity. And then coffee enemas or coffee suppositories, like there's a brand called Zenoplex, which we like. It's on naturalreference.com, that are pretty easy to use and pretty effective at helping to dilate the biliary pathway. And it's different than like a colonic. Like a colonic is like water that's just going mm-hmm. up the mm-hmm. rectum.
They're just cleaning house. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not what we're looking for. We're looking to just wash out all of your flora and stuff. But what we're looking for is that dilation of the biliary pathway.
So it
pathway.
Makes it bigger. So yeah. It can go so it can through flow easier. Yeah.
Right.
If you've got really thick bile. Okay.
Exactly.
And drinking coffee does not do the same thing. Yeah. It's got to be in the back door. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those are good ways to get bile flowing. And we talk about a few others, like if you can't afford supplements. In Chapter 9 of Kick Your Fat in the Nuts. And you can get that audiobook free by doing what Ken has said before.
Audible.com. Well, it's at kickyourfatinthenuts/audible.com.
Or /audiobook, right?
Kick it in the nuts.
Something like that. Yeah, I'll give it again here in a second. We're not find it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being on top of that.
Yeah. And sponsor dropped
it's
us.
Because I have, it's because I have no glucose in my brain.
Are you trying to go keto? Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about the part that I did not understand when I wrote Kick Your Fat in the Nuts. Because the way that I always worked with clients and with book readers and everything was to help them reduce carbs so that their body would have the ability to access stored fat once insulin came down. Because when insulin is high, the body can't access stored fat. So if you can reduce the carb intake, insulin can come down, they can lose fat, it's easy peasy. However, with low blood pressure clients, they have a real hard time when they start to drop carbs because carbs is what they're using to run on. They don't have enough minerals to buffer low sugars. So that's where we kind of did this medium carb food thing where we would have people eat things like sweet potatoes and berries or plantains or butternut squash, foods that contain carbohydrates, but not so much that it spikes insulin so high that they have this spike and crash. But when we do this, what we're doing is we're just kind of giving them a small dose of carbs to get them through the day. So they have that source of fuel without having to spike insulin levels so high. But you're still going to raise insulin levels some. You're still going to restrict fat loss some, but at least you get to be sane. Being sane is good.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah, it helps a lot. In a lot of situations, it helps to be sane. But so the piece of information that I got really excited about was the fact that the brain pretty much only operates on glucose. But we've always known that when carbs are very low, the body can turn protein into glucose so that your brain can have some type of fuel. So we've always known that there is no essential carbohydrate. Like some people say, that's not true at all. But what I didn't know is that the brain can use ketones as fuel just like it uses glucose.
Awesome.
It's pretty awesome sauce. And so some people say that it can use ketones for about 40% of what it needs. Other people say even more. And I don't know. I just know that it can use it and that it's been showing to be very effective. Mm-hmm. Not effectful. That's a totally made up.
That's made up. I made that up.
So what we've been excited about was, because I always use this type of very low carb, high fat approach with just the people that had a decent amount of minerals, so they wouldn't have crazy cravings and go insane and all this kind of stuff when you took all of their carbs away. But what we've seen is that a lot of people that have low blood pressure and deal with all the issues that come with low blood pressure, whether it be depression, cravings, dizzy, what else you got?
Twitching.
RLS.
Epilepsy. Anxiety,
yeah, seizure, all that kind
insomnia.
Of
stuff.
Insomnia. So they're doing well by using ketones instead of those sugars. And then they can move into a situation where they're not having such the cravings. They don't have to. Because what happens is this has worked really well with the medium carb stuff, dropping carbs, fixing digestion so they can get actual nutrients. All those things have worked really well. But if a low blood pressure person went off course or didn't do the right thing for a few days and their resources would go really low and they would snap and lose it and have a burrito or something. So what we found is that if they can do this instead, it seems to be making it a lot easier for them. So we're going to kind of talk about how to try this for yourself and is it right for you, that kind of stuff.
So would you be saying that maybe you would you're reconsidering the approach with people that are in a low blood pressure state? Instead of using these moderate glycemic carbs, you would say go full on and try to get into the ketogenic state, or you think that's still a good way for them to go?
I think it's a transition that has to happen.
Yeah.
I think the medium carbs do have to exist as a transition, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Especially, we'll get into that a lot next week when we talk about Kenna's experience with this, too.
Cool.
But the places where I would not use this is if someone had lost their gallbladder. And, you know, because it takes some effort to understand how to use ox bile and get that working right. If somebody's using ox bile properly and they're successful at it, they could probably do this by ramping up slowly. But that's a situation where this would not be my first recommendation.
How about also maybe with someone who is in a catabolic state dealing with insomnia? Because like sometimes, like what I found in my own personal experience with this diet is, if I don't have carbs in the evening, like I'll just stay awake and just, you know, I've created this like super high amount of energy and my body's like burning fat like crazy. And the carbohydrates, for me, like after my weight training, they're pro-anabolic, which is that restful state. If you haven't heard us talk about those imbalances, we get into depth about them in your books and our online courses. That anabolic state is one that you want to encourage your body to go into in the evening if you're not already there. So carbohydrates can be a helpful possible tool for someone who's like stuck in a catabolic state and is just always awake, you know.
Right. And I think that it can be a helpful tool until they become insulin resistant at all. Because, you know, I was similar. I was very catabolic, but I was also very insulin resistant. So I could not use carbs to push me more anabolic because my body couldn't process enough of them to make that anabolic effect. So that's one thing. But one thing that's important when we look at, you know, someone like you using a diet like this too, is that you really have to look at, I think, blood ketones. Because one of the big differences between an Atkins diet and using a ketogenic diet therapeutically is that it doesn't take a lot of effort to show ketones on a urine test strip. I think that most, not all, but most people could do that within a few days of reducing carbs and increasing their fats. But they talk a lot about to be in true nutritional ketosis, your blood ketone levels need to be between 0.5 and 3.0. And I think that it's much harder to reach that level. And the big difference between this and something like an Atkins diet is that you could lose a lot of weight just by reducing your carbs so much that your body's making some ketones so that you know you're burning stored fat for fuel. So that's great. But when it comes to the brain, you need to be making a lot more ketones for those ketones to be turned into beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is a type of ketone that the body can really use for fuel, just like it could use glucose in most situations or most functions type of thing. So that's the big difference, is that most people need to be a little more aggressive to get to the point to where they're making so much ketones that the brain can use that for fuel freely. Small amounts of ketones, the body can use fat for many types of fuel, and it can burn fat, and that's great. But I think to get to a therapeutic ketogenic state, they have to be a little more aggressive. And I think that's the biggest difference between this and an Atkins type situation. How do you feel about all that?
I like it all. I'm just really enraptured. So Jimmy does a great job in his book Keto Clarity talking about how to track this in your own case and see like where are you at on that, on that progression. And he talks about how initially you can see elevated urine ketones with little test strips you just pee on, really simple. But then once your body, and you said this, I'm just reiterating, once you get good at using ketones, your urine ketone count will drop, and sometimes for some people disappear. And you think, oh, what am I doing wrong? I've been on the diet for a week now and I don't have any ketones anymore. Like, and you might think you're messing up, but actually your body's just using those ketones now instead of just peeing them out. So that's when your blood or breath ketones will elevate. And there's, you can buy ketone blood test strips. You have to prick your finger and look at your, you can actually see, you test your own blood directly. But there's a much more fun way that's just a really new invention that I got a couple of months ago. It's by a company called Ketonix, ketonix.com. And it's a really great breath analyzer. You just, you can either have a battery powered or USB powered, and you just exhale into it, and it tells you what your breath ketone levels are, which have been shown to have really strong correlation to blood ketone levels. So if you're doing a good job on the ketogenic diet, you may see barely any ketones in your urine once you've been on the diet for a while, but you'll start to see way more in your breath and blood.
Yeah, I got the one from Ketonix too, it's, and it's cool, probably right? Like 150, something like that, 130,
yeah,
something like
but
that.
If you're a health dork or really into
right,
it, it's really fun.
Like that, we're really totally, fun. You know, but it doesn't show your actual ketone levels, but it does give you a correlation. I mean, are you medium? Are you high? Is there really not much going on at all? And you can get a good picture that way. But the blood ketone strips, the meters aren't expensive, but the strips are expensive if it's something you're going to want to test every day or something. But if you just want to see what's going on, you could check, you know, once a week and see how you're doing and at least confirm how well it's really going. But so when we look at this fact that the body can use ketones for brain fuel, it's really huge, and it helps us understand why is this type of diet helping people with like hypoglycemia issues. And we have a whole episode on hypoglycemia, and do you want to explain real quick just what happens in a hypoglycemic often even in a bipolar person too?
Yeah, so hypoglycemia, the term means low blood sugar, and that's when your blood sugar levels go too low for you to function well. And and as we'll elaborate in a minute, like that range of where that is can be different for someone who's in a ketogenic state. Like your blood sugar levels could be clinically very low, but you feel fine because you have ketones. So when a normal person eating a normal non-ketogenic diet has their blood sugar levels go low, their body starts to freak out and you can get hangry or anxious or tired or shaky. And your body's like, I need more sugar, I need more glucose, and it'll give you these intense cravings because the insulin that's been present in the bloodstream because of your last meal that was carbohydrate-rich has driven a substantial amount of sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cells, and now there's no more sugar to run off of. So your body's getting these intense energy demands, which is what the hypoglycemic symptoms are. It's like, I don't have any more energy, give me more carbohydrates.
Right, and a lot of these people are dealing with issues that are causing their insulin to be overly powerful. So when they eat an amount of carbohydrates that might do fine for one of us or somebody else, it spikes that sugar high, and then the insulin is too powerful and it sweeps too much out, and that's when they start to fall apart. So with this diet, if you're doing a ketogenic approach, all of a sudden you remove all those sugars that were causing the spikes and crashes. So that's one benefit. The next benefit is that you create ketones so that your brain has fuel. So now all of a sudden you don't have all those symptoms that were coming from the hypoglycemia.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome and remarkable. Like when I was first starting as a personal trainer, 15 years ago or something like that, they would teach that you have to eat every 2 to 3 hours to keep your metabolism up. And like that was because the way that you eat in a normal fitness diet is very glycogen dependent. It's like healthy carbs and like a little bit of protein, a tiny amount of fat, right? So you're constantly running off of glucose. And yeah, your body will crash and your metabolism will slow down when you run out of fuel. And when you're running on carbs, you can run out of fuel in a few hours.
And we talk even in my book a lot about how if you go too long without eating, your body's going to start breaking down tissue. It's going to find fuel. It's going to make fuel. And so this is a way to get around that.
Yeah. And well, it's a way to optimize that. Like the fuel it finds is fat.
Right.
It's awesome. So, and Jimmy talks about this, and every client that I've had go on this successfully has found, like, all of a sudden, you're barely hungry. Like, Jimmy talks about, like, these spontaneous fasts where, like, you just skip lunch and dinner because you weren't hungry. And that's because you have energy. I mean, you're tapping into your body's stored fats. So your metabolism is not slowing down, even though your sugar is really low. Your body is sometimes running warmer and more active with more brain function than usual because you have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of calories available from your dietary fat and your body fat.
I guess my fear as a normal person would be, I have this fantasy that when I get to my goal weight, I'm going to be able to have sugar every once in a while. I'm going to be able to have, once a week, go out, have a drink, do whatever. And if eating this way, is that going to kind of screw me in the end? Like, you're never going to be able to feel good when you go off of this. You're going to feel like crap, and then getting back is going to be so hard. And you're teaching your body to run off of ketones. And so when you do put a sugar in it, does it go berserk? I mean, that's my fear.
I think that there's a couple layers in there. And let's cover that either at the end of the show or next week, because we want to get through the main steps. But don't forget that. Write that down so that we come back to that, because that's important. And also, we're going to cover a cyclical ketogenic diet. I guess John Kiefer is a big fan of that.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about when that can be right. And that's usually a situation where you put yourself in a ketogenic state, but you take yourself out once a month or so on purpose. And a lot of people feel like there are benefits to that. I don't know that I agree to those benefits, but I have down that we want to talk about what they are. Do you have something you want to say about that now?
Like everything, it depends on the person and their state and their goals. Like I like where my cells are at, like they're fat, they can use fat and carbohydrates. So when your cells become more and more prone to using fat for energy, they're gonna want to do that. And you can get this headspace, and Kiefer's book Carb Backloading, as well as Rob Fagan's natural hormone enhancement. Talk about using carbohydrates periodically at specific times. for different reasons, like refueling muscle glycogen, helping gain muscle mass at the right times and in cyclical patterns for people that aren't necessarily trying to gain muscle, can be very beneficial. So just know, like, you don't have to never eat carbohydrates again.
You're about to quit.
So, but that's not the case. A lot of people, like myself, like, my body will go into ketosis overnight, and then by evening my ketone levels are really high.
I have no stored fat. Yeah. Then, like, I have to get to that place probably.
Well, not just that I have no stored fat, but that my cells are fat adapted. Like, they have the mechanisms in the mitochondria to use fat for energy. And the more you get your body to run off of fat, the more, like, set up they get to use fat for fuel. So when I have a bunch of carbs in my post-workout meal, my body uses those sugars, puts them in muscle glycogen, and then by morning, I'm back into burning fat.
And the biggest factor in all of that is how insulin resistant or not is the individual. And if someone has a lot of weight to lose, they're almost always insulin resistant. So there has to be some way to fix
that.
There has to be enough time to fix that issue to be able to get away with things better. But we'll talk about that more. Right now, I want to get into 8 steps that someone should take when they first start this, and just lay those down. And if you go to kickitinthenuts.com and click on radio shows and then click on show notes, you can find this episode, which is episode number 57. Nina says it, so we know it's right. And we'll put these steps there so that you can see those. But the number one step is to fix digestion. And how does somebody do that?
You go to our course, kickitinthenuts.com, and look up our free course on correcting digestive issues, because it's a complicated thing. Like, we've talked a lot about bile so far, but we haven't really mentioned anything about stomach acid, and that whole thing needed to be on point also. So you want to learn the basics of how digestion works and make sure that you have those basics set up for yourself.
Right, and the number two thing you want to do is get the tools that you're going to need. And the first thing you need is some coconut oil, because that's a great way to start to increase the fats that you intake. Next thing is MCT oil, and MCT oil is just medium chain triglycerides. And this oil kind of is a way to cheat and help your body make ketones a little bit faster. And we'll talk about how to start that, because you want to start it really slow. And you want to get some urine keto sticks that you can get at just about any drugstore, pharmacy. And if you can afford it, get a breath meter or blood test strips and a blood test meter. The meter's only like $20-$30, but the strips are like $4 or $5 a piece, something like that, right?
Yeah, so they add up. You don't have to do them every day. You can do them, like, just at the start to make sure you're doing it right, and then maybe you don't have to do them.
My recommendation is that you use the urine strips for the first month, because for about a month, you'll be able to see ketones in your urine, because that's acetylacetate. That's what your body is peeing out, and that's a type of ketone. But then your body starts to convert that into BHB, which is beta-hydroxybutyrate. And once it starts to convert that and really use those ketones as fuel, you won't pee out as much. But that's when you want to start looking at your breath or your blood ketones, just to make sure. Another thing to understand is that if you took the first month to get everything going correctly, now you're burning ketones for fuel. You're realizing, I don't really crave sugar anymore. Holy mackerel, it's been 6 hours since I ate and I feel fine. I have all this energy, all these things. You'll notice these things. So if that continues, you'll know that you're doing okay without testing your blood.
Yeah.
I think Will and I are just psycho. We just like to do that kind of stuff.
I just love,
be a lab rat.
I feel like it's a cool score. Like, oh, I got moderate ketones. Right. Awesome. Right. I'm getting leaner right now.
Right. So, but know that you don't have to have that, because you'll know if things are going well, and you'll be dropping sizes if you have weight to lose and feeling better emotionally, more stable, all that kind of stuff. So that's the second step. The third step is to eliminate starches and bring down carbs to about 20 grams a day is where most people want to start.
Which is very little.
It's very little. That's like
That's like the cards you breathe out on accident when you walk by a bread store.
Right.
I mean, I was shocked. You can Google, you know, for ketogenic vegetables and like the carbs and stuff on it. And I was shocked. Like, I was like, tomatoes, you know, and different things that I didn't think. I knew they had them, but I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah. You can eat a tomato and can pull you out.
A tomato can pull you out.
Right. And so different people will vary. So what I like to see people do is bring their carbs down to about 20 per day.
Counting fiber or no?
And fiber doesn't count. You know how we teach to look at active carbs when we're reducing carbs, and we look at the carb and you subtract fiber, and that's the active carbs. But that doesn't work when you're trying to get into ketosis. You need to just look at the actual carb count of the food that you're eating. So bring your carbs way down and put yourself into ketosis where you can see that with the urine test strips, and then you may be able to try some things like maybe even berries or tomatoes or some of those things that have a little more carbs, and you may be able to stay in ketosis with those if you're not very insulin resistant. Those people that are insulin resistant, that'll probably knock them out. So you want to drop that down to 20. However, if you have low blood pressure, you may want to stick with using like sweet potatoes for breakfast, or some type of medium carb food for the first few days. And if you add the MCT oil in, like we're about to talk about, you may be able to start making some ketones even though you're still eating those medium carb foods, because the MCT oil can kind of help you cheat a little bit. And I've seen a few clients do that, and they had a pretty easy transition. And Kenna didn't do that. Maybe next week she'll talk about her transition and the pleasantries that took place.
Actually, I was shocked that I wasn't worse. I was really shocked.
Yeah, me too. in any case, so that's a good thing to do. And so number four becomes consume a teaspoon of coconut oil at each meal. And then you might want to start trying to do a half a teaspoon of MCT oil. And what you'll find is that if you do too much fat, more than you have the bile to handle, you'll start to feel a little nauseous. You'll have upset stomach. Maybe you'll poop diarrhea your pants. Too, I don't know.
You can get diarrhea too.
Yeah.
Sure. So anything where you're consuming more fats than you can handle, it's going to let you know, okay, back off. So I just like to see people start off really low, just like half a teaspoon. It's not very much at all. It doesn't taste like anything. And then just slowly build that up so that you see, okay, I am handling this, and it'll start giving you energy and you'll feel satiated. It's really great.
And even if you can't handle it and you're feeling nauseous, that helps too, because then you don't feel like eating, because you're like, I'm going to vomit if I put this in my mouth right now.
Diarrhea, no appetite.
Yeah, exactly. I lost some weight this week.
That actually did happen when I first started going at it, because I didn't listen about going slow with MCT oil. I just poured some in, you know. It's probably a couple tablespoons.
I'm a professional.
And I was like, it was a rough 3 days.
Yeah.
But I even still in it, I'd wake up and I'd be like, I am so lean. Like my ring, I can't even wear my old ring anymore, because my all that like water retention just drops out when your insulin levels are down.
Yeah. So just start slowly so that it can be an enjoyable experience for you. And so you're going to lift that up as you bring down your carbs. And then after a few days, if you're feeling good and you can use a decent amount of coconut oil, MCT oil, you can consume fats and use some butter, stuff like that, ghee, then you can drop those medium carbs and the transition should be very easy.
And you get real excited when you're like, oh my gosh, I can have a heavy cream. I can have butter. This is yum. I can put this on my veggies. And
I can have a ribeye steak.
Yeah, ribeye steak.
It's good.
You want to also just think like mechanically about what you're doing. Like, you may have signs of decent bile flow. Like, oh, I checked it out. My saliva is good. My stool is dark. I'm not gassy. I don't have diarrhea. I'm good to go. I'm just going to do this. And then all of a sudden you quadruple your fat intake. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember, you need enough bile to match all that fat. Not like the volume equally, but you need sufficient amount of bile. Just like you need more dish soap if you've got a bunch of dishes to wash, right? You need enough bile to break down all those fats. So if you start to get any of those symptoms of poor bile flow, don't just think, oh, well, I tested my bile and it was fine. It must be something else. Like, you got to understand you're placing a huge increase of demand on that aspect of your digestive system.
And one theory, and I can agree with this theory, is that demand could eventually, actually improve bile flow because you're telling your body, I need it more, so it sends it more, and then it gets to flow better and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't like to see people do that initially, because without doing some steps to thin that bile and get it to flow better, it could be a miserable month.
Yeah.
And while you're just trying to talk your bile into flowing by eating fats, because you'll be nauseous.
And you were talking about the enemas or the coffee enemas for the biliary pathway. You could have good bile flow, but like that's stopped up or something for some reason. Yeah. Or too small,
stones.
Or,
you can have gallstones in there.
Something in front of it.
And you can, like, I've seen a lot of clients when they first start trying to get their bile flow, if they are blocked up in that way where there's restriction or blockage in the biliary pathway, they'll do like a beet flow flush and they'll get really itchy and have skin rashes and that sort of thing. And they think, oh, it's an allergic reaction, but it's not. It's actually like the bile is finally mobilized. It's trying to move out the body, but it's blocked because the pathway is congested, probably with gallstones or hormonally for different reasons. And that bile refluxes back through the blood and then the skin is trying to clear it out. So that's, you know, an important factor to know, like, you've got to have that system working well. And if you do a beet flow flush and you're like, oh, my skin got all itchy, like, that's an important piece. Like, oh, you need to look at that other aspect of bile flow.
So step number 6 is to reduce your protein consumption. Because once you're processing fats and you have that fuel source, you won't need as much protein. And reducing protein will make it easier for your body to produce ketones. Do you want to talk about Let's talk about that.
That's gluconeogenesis is the creation of glucose out of protein. So your liver likes to do that and stores it in this energy form and creates pyruvate. And it's basically, even though you didn't eat carbs necessarily, you had protein, it's basically the same energetic or metabolic energetic pathway, the glycogenic pathway. So if you're eating a bunch of proteins and you're like zero carb, like someone doing the Atkins diet erroneously, like I had like 5 burgers and a bunch of cheese and I'm not in ketogenic state. This sucks. Because you got all this glucose available from those proteins. So
and it's harder to digest meat.
That too has its own aspects. Yep. But that it metabolically, even if you are effectively digesting that meat, like you're giving your body a glucose source, which you don't want to do. So
might as well just eat sugar.
Right, yeah, well, go for it. Just have a Coke, whatever. But Jimmy Moore talks about a rule of thumb being generally like 1 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight, which is roughly equivalent to 1 gram. Yeah, it's 2.2.
Oh, okay.
So just half your body weight in grams. Like if you weigh 200 pounds, no more than 100 pounds or 100 grams of protein a day. 100 pounds.
So I'm going to eat this cow.
So if you're a guy who weighs like or a girl who weighs 200 pounds, you would want to limit your protein consumption to 100 grams of protein per day or less. It's not a goal to get 100. It's a goal to stay under.
And so to give you an idea, like I would usually eat 2 chicken legs with a plate of broccoli and maybe some ghee on it or something and coconut oil. So if I'm doing ketogenic stuff, I'll have 1 chicken leg with broccoli and ghee on it, and maybe I'll have a coconut yummy that we teach people how to make, which is basically you're just having a tablespoon of coconut oil. And maybe I'll do 2 of those even sometimes. With a little bit of MCT oil. And I find that I'm just as satiated from that meal, except I'm satiated much longer, like 3 hours longer.
Yeah.
So that'll give you an idea of the protein adjustment that you might want to make. So number 7 is to increase your fat consumption slowly, like we've been talking about, and reduce your fat consumption if you start to feel nauseous and you understand that you're not digesting those fats very well. So just take that step slowly and increase that slowly. And then number 8 is ketones may take a week or two to start showing up in the urine for some people. It's very common if they're really a sugar burner. So if you're unable to reduce carbs and protein enough and increase fats enough, this process could take a little longer. Like if a lot of fats are making you nauseous, you're going to have to do this a little bit slower. So be patient with yourself. It's very common to take a couple of weeks for it to happen. And like Kenna showed ketones much slower than many of my other clients. So just know that that's okay.
Yeah, and some people feel way less energy when they first start this, because not only does your digestion have to get on board with this, but your cells also have to like change their mitochondrial structure and cell membrane receptivities to be more set up for fat metabolism. Jim Moore calls it being fat adapted, like your cells being good at using fat for energy.
And also your brain, like just firing. Your brain too? If you have to do something really, really important,
right?
It requires your brain. Maybe wait a couple of days or something to start this.
Yeah, but once you get there, it's incredible. Like the clarity of your mental performance.
The keto clarity.
Yeah, but it's also, we didn't really talk about like therapeutic uses, but it's been shown to have really great effects in like reducing or eliminating chances of Alzheimer's and
and PCOS and when you look at those issues, a lot of times we kind of, you know, blame carbs and especially PCOS because it appears polycystic ovarian ovarian syndrome.
You said it like last week or something. I didn't remember.
Yeah, but you know, we view that as a situation that's brought about in an overly anabolic state. And that doesn't mean that we're right about it. That's just the people we see with PCOS seem to always be very overly anabolic. And carbs and sugars are very pro-anabolic. And these people are usually on a diet where they're eating all of these carbs and pushing this imbalance into a worse situation. And that's why this diet has been able to help that, because it allows them to reduce those carbs and improve that imbalance. So what we're going to do next week is we're going to answer everybody's questions about this, give some tips. But the main thing to take away from this right now is that if you have a lot of weight to lose, this is flat out the easiest way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't always understood why, but I do now. And I've had clients that lost even more than 200 pounds in a year. And when people would be asking, how are you doing this? The reply was always, it's easy. I'm not having any struggle at all. I don't have cravings. It's just easy. Mm-hmm. And I even had a client that was having such an easy time losing hundreds of pounds, and they stopped eating coconut oil because a family member who was a doctor said that saturated fat is going to kill you.
Oh, man.
So they stopped.
Not that extra 200 pounds that you had on, but the saturated
fat. Yeah, that extra 200 pounds that you just lost doing this, that wasn't a problem. But saturated fat is going to kill you because they've been telling me that for 20 years.
Oh,
so he stopped using the coconut oil, and then all of his cravings came back, and he wasn't happy because the brain was not getting the ketones for fuel like it was before.
Man, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, so that's what happens when you follow the medical advice.
Dang it. One other thing we didn't mention or include in the steps was, like, if you're someone who's, like, running on low blood sugar to start with and you're trying to, like, do this transition thing, you can totally take advantage of supporting your blood pressure with more salts, like trace mineral drops or salting your food heavily. Jimmy Moore talks about this, like, long fast he tried to do where he was doing just water, and he had before he'd done it for like 10 days or 2 weeks or a month or something, where he was just having these bouillon cubes, like sodium, and then he tried to do it with just water and he crashed. And I don't know if he realized what exactly was happening with electrolyte deficiencies, but that's another way you can really help yourself get into this state faster, is by keeping your blood pressure up with plenty of salts and trace mineral drops.
And by improving digestion, you also pull more minerals out of your food, and that helps too. And we're going to talk about intermittent fasting a little bit next week too. So come back next week and we'll tie all this together for you.
All right. Our featured audiobook today is Keto Clarity by Jimmy Moore. And since Audible is our show sponsor, our listeners can get a free 30-day trial and download this audiobook for free. To get this audiobook for free, just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. Register for your free 30-day trial and you will see one free credit. Just search for Keto Clarity and that can be your free one audiobook. One free audiobook.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, and next week we're also going to talk about Will's post. But if you want to see his post on ketogenic diets, go to bodyofdollars.net.
Mybodyofdollars.net.
And in the search box, search for ketogenic and you'll find it.
And I've nearly forgot to say, if you want to learn more about how to look at your own body chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. And also always go over to Will's. My body of knowledge.
Always go there.
Always go
just
there.
Whatever
there's
you're
pictures.
Doing, just go there.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.